Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link on this Friday, September the 8th. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up on today's program, Tanzania is shocked by the shooting of opposition politician Tundu Lissu.
Lissu's life has always been in danger, and many people believed it was possible such an incident would happen one day, and he was worried that his life was in danger because of the friction with the government.
It's World Literacy Day. South Sudan, one of the countries with the world's highest illiteracy rate, is struggling to get more teachers in classrooms.
Currently, we have about 40,000 teachers working in over 5,700 schools. The number of teachers is not enough.
These stories plus a lot more, and also your responses coming up shortly. But first, this roundup of world news.
My name is Jane Nyinge with DW News. The death toll from a powerful earthquake that struck off the southern coast of Mexico has reached more than 30. The Mexican president Enrique Peña Nieto described the quake as the country's biggest in a century. About 50 million people across Mexico felt the quake, which was measured at 8.2. There are fears the death toll could rise, especially in the southern area of Tabasco. The U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency has urged Florida residents to evacuate as soon as possible if ordered to do so in the face of approaching Hurricane Irma, which has left a trail of destruction. Irma has been downgraded to a Category 4 hurricane, but is still considered extremely dangerous. Here is Block Long, one of the agency's administrators.
The forecast and the direct impacts of this storm have yet to be determined because, one, it's a very powerful storm, but the nature of the curve in that forecast after 72 hours is going to be the key to see who gets the worst impacts here. It's not a question of if Florida is going to be impacted. It's a question of how bad Florida is going to be impacted and where the storm ends up over the next 4 to 5 days as it passes inland.
There are fears of renewed fighting in Central African Republic if nothing is done to dismantle local and foreign militias. According to a UN report released today, the National Security Forces don't have enough capacity to disarm the militias, and the more than 10,000 UN military personnel have also failed to convince locals that they can offer them enough protection. You're listening to DW News, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. The South African government has announced its decision to extend residency permits for close to 200,000 illegal Zimbabwean migrants who got amnesty in 2010. Speaking to the media in Pretoria, Home Affairs Minister Lingiwe Mkhize said that the permits will be extended for 4 years. From South Africa, here is Tuzo Komalu with the details.
The holders of these permits will be able to work, study and conduct business in South Africa. However, the permits will not be extended after the expiry date and will not qualify the holder to apply for permanent residency. The Zimbabwe community in South Africa welcomed the decision, but wants the government to consider undocumented citizens as well.
For the third day running, police have clashed with protesters in Togo's capital Lome. Thousands of people have taken to the streets demanding President Faure Gnassingbé should step aside. The president's father, Gnassingbé Eyadema, ruled the country for nearly 40 years before his death. And former Colombian FARC rebel leader Rodrigo Ludono, who is now the head of new political party, today asked for forgiveness from Pope Francis for the pain and suffering his group inflicted on people during 5 decades of war. Pope Francis, who is in Colombia for a 5-day visit, has urged Colombians to put aside their differences and push for peace. For more news and information, visit our website, DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyinge.
Welcome back. And if you're listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany, I'm Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Now, Kenya's media are reporting that Tundu Lissu, the Tanzanian opposition politician who was shot and wounded on Thursday, has been admitted at the Aga Khan Hospital in Nairobi. Lissu is a fierce critic of Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli and has been arrested on several occasions. Tanzania's opposition Chadema party has said Lissu is in critical but stable condition, but the party supporters are angry about the attempt on the party's chief whip and are urging the government to investigate. Eunice Wanjiru presents this report by Lina Ja.
Female supporters of Tanzania's opposition Chadema party singing at the party's headquarters in Dar es Salaam. They've come out to show support for Tundu Lissu, who was shot and wounded in the country's capital, Dodoma. Lissu is a well-known critic of President John Pombe Magufuli and a leading member of the opposition Chadema. His attack came as a shock to many in and outside Tanzania. The outspoken politician has been arrested at least 6 times this year, accused of insulting the president and disturbing public order, among other charges. According to Chadema's national vice chairman, Professor Abdallah Safari, the attacker's intention was to kill Lissu.
Lissu's life has always been in danger, and many people believed it was possible such an incident would happen one day. And he was worried that his life was in danger because of the friction with the government. And when you look at what happened at the vehicle, you will notice that the shooter aimed for the chest and the head. The intention was to kill, and the type of gun that was used is not less than an SMG. It was a heavy weapon meant to hurt Lissu.
Lissu was shot near his home in the capital, Dodoma. For now, the gunmen are unknown, but the police have launched a manhunt for Lissu's attacker. Frederick Sumaye, the former Prime Minister of Tanzania, says the government should take responsibility for the safety of its citizens.
When there is an absence of concrete measures on the part of the government, then you know there is a real problem of governance in the country. When an incident happens that concerns the lives of citizens, all government bodies should work to ensure the perpetrators are brought to justice and that such incidents never happen again.
The East African country was known as stable in the past. Rebecca Rumpels of Chatham House in London is concerned about the situation in Tanzania.
I think that it will deepen fear. I think there is already serious concern about what's been going on. This is only, you know, the latest in a series of actions taken against Tundu Lissu. He's been arrested a number of times. We've had other senior members of Chadema arrested. And this is just, you know, the kind of latest sharpening of the situation.
Tundu Lissu was airlifted to Nairobi early on Friday for treatment. President Magufuli has faced growing accusations by rights groups and others of being intolerant of criticism since he was elected in 2015.
Lina Ja compiled that report and was presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
And I will have to say that this story has been getting lots of responses and reactions. Let's have a look at the comments you have been sending on our Facebook page, DW Africa. The first one from Honor Gate says, "Our Tanzania is not a safe place to live."
And indeed, the responses have been coming tremendously. We have Tanzanian social activist Maria Saruntigu, who tweeted saying, "Nothing beats the power of prayer. With one voice and one spirit, Tanzania, we pray for the recovery of Tundu Lissu."
And several embassies reacted, and the EU mission in Tanzania tweeted their statement, saying the delegation of the European Union in Tanzania calls upon the authorities to bring swiftly to justice those responsible for this unwarranted attack against democracy.
And Tanzania's president himself has also responded. He expressed his shock at the attack of he made a statement on Twitter.
Well, and now moving over to our top story world. It's been a week in which natural disasters have hit the American continent, with Hurricane Irma continuing to wreak havoc in the Caribbean. Another major catastrophe has hit the region, this time in Mexico. Late last night, an earthquake at 8.2 on the Richter scale, the biggest on the country, has seen in a century struck 123 kilometers south of the town of Pichijiapan in the region of Chiapas. Authorities estimate that at least 32 people have been killed by the tremor. What's more, there are now more concerns about potential tsunamis that threaten much of the Central America and even Ecuador in the south. More with this report from Jake Davis.
That's the sound of a house in southern Mexico the moment the earthquake hit. plates are shaking, bottles flying off the top of the fridge. The quake was so powerful that the shock was felt 1,000 kilometers away in Mexico City, as well as in neighboring Guatemala. Here's what one eyewitness had to say.
Horrible. I have never experienced something that ugly. In the beginning it was weak, but then it got stronger. It was crazy. While we were going downstairs, the earth trembled even more, and we were thrown around.
The Mexican president Enrique Peña Nieto has already warned his people that the catastrophe is far from over, with a predicted aftershock due to occur in less than 24 hours' time.
This is the biggest magnitude of an earthquake recorded in our country in at least the last 100 years. Within the next 24 hours, we are expecting an aftershock, less strong than the actual quake, possibly of a magnitude of 7.2.
Professor Heidrun Kopp, geophysicist at the Center for Ocean Research in Kiel in Germany, explained to Deutsche Welle earlier the threat an aftershock might pose to already fragile infrastructure.
Even if the main shock left a house standing, the aftershocks may possibly cause it to tumble and be destroyed.
And what about the likelihood of tsunamis in the surrounding area now that the earthquake has hit?
So we do expect tsunamis with a run-up height of about up to 1 meter or several feet in the neighboring countries, especially El Salvador, Guatemala, also Ecuador, because this is where the South American continent bends around.
After a week of destruction on the American continent, one can only hope that the fallout from this earthquake is not as acute as COP predicts.
Jake Davies with that report.
And now let's take you back to Africa. It's World Literacy Day and the United Nations is marking another milestone in the reduction of the illiteracy rate across the globe. Worldwide, the trend is heading downward, but several countries are not making much progress. These countries include South Sudan, where only about 27% of the country's 12 million people can read and write. DW's Wake Simon Wood reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
South Sudan is struggling to educate its 12 million people.
Currently, we have about 40,000 teachers working in over 5,700 schools in the country. And we have about 2 million children and youth who are in school. Therefore, the number of teachers is not enough.
That was Education Minister Deng Deng Hock speaking to reporters Thursday in a news conference in Juba. Hock says 73% of the country's entire population cannot read and write. The government had said it would bolster the education sector, but its recently passed annual budget speaks otherwise. The South Sudan General Education Act stipulates that 15% of the government's finances should go into education, but the new budget allocated only 3%. Several factors have been blamed for the country's high illiteracy rate. According to Hock, traditionally, most parents would rather send their children to look after cattle than going to school.
Some people do not think education is good for them, or their parents do not think that education is good for them. And we need to continue the campaign that we are currently doing through the support of Girls Education South Sudan program to change minds and hearts of our citizens to embrace education and to allow their children to go to school.
The statistics of teacher-student ratio is one teacher per over 100 pupils. Hock says only few teachers have higher qualifications, most of them fall below standards. The Ministry of Education has developed a 10 and 5 years strategic education plans to reform the education sector. The 5-year strategic plan is targeting to have more 1.8 million children into school by the year 2022.
Wake Simon Wudu in Juba with that report. And Zipporah, we don't have much time, but at least one response on this story.
Yeah. Now, there's Espo writing from Nakivale refugee camp in southern Uganda, and he says he lives in a refugee camp where education is not a priority. Yet the majority of the children cannot get access to school. Quality education is still a dream.
That's not the end of it. If you have your responses, place them on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
If you're just joining us, welcome. Welcome to DW's Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
In the next 15 minutes, Ugandan blogger, journalist on the run. So, why is he worried about the state of press freedom in his country?
It is also very surprising that at this time in Ugandan politics and Ugandan history, where things are supposed to be getting better, they actually get worse.
And if you have any response, don't hesitate to leave them on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We will get to them whenever we can.
But first, here in Germany, campaign is in full swing for elections in just over 2 weeks. The incumbent Chancellor Angela Merkel of the centre-right CDU party is regarded as a favourite, with Martin Schulz of the Social Democratic Party, the SDP, her main rival. Here on Africa Link, we will be keeping you informed during the run-up to the elections, as well as analysing the result and what it means for Germany's ties with Africa. Five journalists from Deutsche Welle's Africa Service are about to hit the road and spend a week touring through Germany, finding out firsthand what people think. One of them is, of course, our own Wanjiko Mwaura. She's been telling me more about the trip and the team's goals.
Our goal is to find out what people feel, especially Africans living in Germany, feel about the upcoming elections. Are they going to vote? Are they even interested in any way? So this is the aim, to actually talk to Africans living in Germany and find out, what do they think about these upcoming elections?
You yourself are an African. What do you think are some of the issues Africans look into or will be looking into when voting here in Germany?
There are several of them. As an African, of course, I am quite interested in immigration. But this is, like I mentioned, this is the goal, to find out what they themselves think. But generally, it's not just Africans that we will be talking to. We will also be talking to Germans themselves, as well as foreigners living in Germany. So people from other European countries or other continents as well. And some of the key things that have been at the forefront have been immigration, taxes, and the economy as well. People want to find out, is the economy going to continue growing as it has been, knowing that Germany is one of the largest economies in the world.
We know you're not just touring Berlin, but you're touring other parts of Germany. Tell us more about this program and what you'll be up to, how you'll be going. We're eager to know.
We will be taking a bus from Berlin and driving by ourselves. We are a team of five African journalists from different countries, actually. We have a colleague from Nigeria, we have a colleague from Ethiopia, we have one from Burundi, and another one from Rwanda. During this trip, we will be posting our photos on Facebook, some videos, of course, and so I'm inviting everyone who's listening to this interview to go over to our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, and you will follow all of this. So I cannot tell you everything that we will do, because I will take out the sweetness out of it. So do follow the trip on DW Africa Facebook page, and then invite your friends. And also, if there are any questions, Zipporah, from our listeners, they can also send them in and we will answer them right here on Africa Link. So if you wonder, for example, how do people vote in Germany? So do they have one ballot paper with faces or with parties? All of these are questions that we are welcoming. So tell us what you would like to know about the German elections. For example, something just quickly before you ask me to go, Zipporah. For example, people have been talking about this being Angela Merkel's fourth term in power as the Chancellor of Germany. And people are wondering, why aren't the rest of the countries asking her to step down? Hasn't she been in power for 16 years already? Or rather, she will be in power for 16 years. And African leaders being in power for more than 10 years become such a big deal. So we will be explaining how this is possible. So for starters, Angela Merkel can run for this position again, because there is no term limit for a chancellor in Germany.
Well, we're looking forward to hear from you, Wanjiko, and your team. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
I was talking to a colleague, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Are you excited about that?
Yeah, we're looking forward.
I'm definitely looking forward to it as well. Anyways, we are monitoring this story that is currently developing. We are keeping in touch with that story on our Facebook page, DW Africa. That is on South Africa has extended permit to over 200 Zimbabweans.
Oh, what's behind this story? What is it about?
Actually, a lot of people have been responding. The thing is, some people have been talking about this story in South Africa, where over 200 Zimbabweans who crossed over the border into South Africa illegally, and they've settled there. They are carrying on with their lives there in South Africa, and they've been asking for legal permit to stay and work in the country. And this has been a major issue. They've been, a lot of people have been saying that they should not give them permit, they should deport them back to Zimbabwe. Mm. But right now, because of the economic crisis in Zimbabwe, so a lot of people are actually advocating on their behalf. And so far, it looks like they've extended their stay in South Africa.
Wow. So what are some of the comments we have so far? What are people saying?
Well, we are monitoring it. Mostly people are sharing information at the moment, not really giving their opinion on the story.
Blog report. In this week's blog report, Moses Okile Obukairat has been a man on the run. He fled Uganda 8 years ago, fearing for his life. Trouble started when he published a paper on a land deal scandal questioning Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni's involvement that the Ugandan military raided his office. He was lucky to be out of the office at the time of the raid, but Obukairat saw that Uganda was no longer safe for him. He managed to leave for Germany, where he has since been living. He's currently taking part in a workshop in the Deutsche Welle Academy for Journalists. Obukairat says he has found a voice in blogging and social media, and here he does not shy away from speaking against the ills committed in his home country, against journalists and activists online. I wanted to first find out what he has been up to here in Germany.
Well, I've been living in Germany. I've been trying to publish differently, I mean, independently, and also because actually there are several media houses in Germany where I publish stories and articles about Uganda, actually, and all these kind of things. This is what I do, basically. But of course, I also have something that I'm doing besides what I'm publishing, besides working as a journalist, yes.
And Uganda's position regarding press freedom has dropped this year. This is the reason you fled, actually, 8 years ago.
Oh, yes.
Do you think the situation has changed in Uganda?
It never really changes. As the report itself indicates, it's actually dropping, and it continues to drop. As long as those in power seek to maintain power at all costs, press freedom in Uganda will always keep dropping.
What do you think has led to this drastic drop?
We can call it dictatorship, you know, and the more someone stays in power for a longer time, the more they become kind of a liability, and the more they tend to not become, to tolerate critical voices, because the politicians don't want to be criticized much.
I mean, if you talk about Uganda, we cannot avoid Stella Nyanzi topic. In April, she was arrested for criticizing Ugandan First Lady Janet Museveni on social media and for other anti-government Facebook posts. Why or how is this situation, how the government is clamping down on social media users?
That's actually a very good example of how the government seeks to even control the social media itself. I mean, clamping on critical voices. It's not just only Dr. Nyanzi. I mean, there are so many other incidences, even just publishing itself, publishing books and blogs and so all these kind of things. Government tends to, I mean, individuals actually, look, a president's being criticized for something, and then because the president is treated like someone who's some kind of the first family are treated like some kind of small gods, you know, and who are not supposed to be criticized. It is also very surprising that at this time in Ugandan politics and Ugandan history, where things are supposed to be getting better, they actually get worse. Seem to recognize that actually nation building is that the media has a very big role in nation building.
As a journalist who has worked in this environment, what do you think can be done, or what is the future of the media and social media in Uganda?
I only think that actually it's very good for the journalists to embrace social media, because this is something which is really quite so hard for the government to totally clamp down. You know, there are always ways of airing out voices, you know, and there are so many ways that actually information can be passed through social media, more than instead of using traditional media, like you have the radios and the newspapers, which are so easily controlled by the government.
How are you fighting this issue in Uganda, here in Germany, now that you have press freedom here, you have all the rights here as a journalist fight that?
I try to highlight the plight of journalists in Uganda, for instance. I try to show the world what happens in Uganda and how difficult it is for the journalists to work in this country under this kind of conditions, and also try to, of course, show the better side of what a nation can go through when there's fresh freedom.
Ugandan journalist here in Germany, Moses Ebukirat.
And in sports, we are back to some action as the Bundesliga continues this weekend with Bayern Munich away in Hoffenheim and BVB Borussia Dortmund also away in Freiburg. DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold is here with me with this analysis.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough game for Bayern because we've got a couple of old players from Hoffenheim coming back home with Süle and Rudi. And Bayern haven't looked like they've been firing on all cylinders for the start of the season. So it's a clash of the old experienced Carlo Ancelotti, the coach of Bayern, with the very young 30-year-old Julian Nagelsmann. Bayern, I believe, lost in Hoffenheim last year. I think it's going to be a tough game for Bayern. Maybe a draw.
And as far as I understand, it's the first time that Hoffenheim are playing in three leagues at the same time.
Yeah, Hoffenheim are in three competitions for the first time because by finishing fourth last year, they got into European competition. They went into qualifying for the Champions League, failed, got beat fairly handily by Liverpool, so they're now in the sort of the second tier European competition, the Europa League. But that's still a first experience for them. And I think if you told Julian Nagelsmann and his team at the start of last season that they would be there, they would have taken it.
Now on Sunday, there is quite an interesting match between Hertha Berlin and Werder Bremen. Not so much about the game itself, but about the referee, Bibiana Steinhaus. Can you tell me why Steinhaus is interesting?
Well, in a few words, basically because she is, or not basically, she is the first female referee that will referee a match in one of Europe's top five leagues. It's been a long time coming. She's been refereeing in the second division, the men's second division, since I think about 2007, so about 10 years. She's had all kinds of awards as a women's referee. She's refereed in all kinds of big international games in the women's game. So she's got a wealth of experience. I mean, I think she did the final of the London Olympics, the women's tournament. I think she did the final of the Women's World Cup a few years ago. So she's got all kinds of experience. There's a lot of talk about the fact that maybe she was being held back. You know, there was a change at the top in terms of the German refereeing that allowed her to take this step. There was sort of a feeling the guys there before didn't really want a woman refereeing in the Bundesliga. But, you know, they talked to several of the coaches in their pregame press conferences this week, and everybody agrees, you know, she's really earned it. So I think a lot of people are pulling for her. It's a real breakthrough.
Let's take you now to the FIFA World Cup European qualifiers. Germany is leading in Group C with 24 points, England in Group F, Spain in Group G, followed by Italy and Belgium in Group H are all short of qualifying. Now, the battleground group is Group I, between Croatia, Iceland, Turkey and Ukraine. Who do you think is going to survive in this group?
That's really tough. I think, although they didn't play very well against Turkey and they just edged out their match against Kosovo last week, I think Croatia, they are still top of the group, although they're tied on points now with Iceland. I still think they should get through. Now, there's the battle, as you say, there's four teams within 2 points of each other. I think a lot will come down to when Turkey play Iceland in the next match. That will set things up. So I tend to think it's Croatia and then between Turkey and Iceland.
DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold.
Yeah, and Abu, on social media, we also kept tabs on what is happening in Kenya ahead of the elections. Today, for instance, many people are very amused by Raila Odinga's latest press conference where he called on his supporters to raise money for the new campaign. One picture which was shared several times is that of Kalonzo Musyoka, his running mate, holding up the M-Pesa number to send money to M-Pesa. M-Pesa is Kenya's mobile money app, and many Kenyans have been talking about it. And one HQ Korea is asking, who bewitched Kalonzo? Is Kalonzo a flower girl?
That's quite really funny because when I saw that photo, I thought, okay, someone might really hack that thing and get the money from that M-Pesa account.
I hope not.
We have a response here from Omar who says, one party is taking our money while the other is asking for it. Kenyans, we are done.
Abdulrahim Hish says, it is better to ask for financial support from your supporters than loot the taxpayers' money to campaign. That defines your honesty.
Well, that's all we had time for. I am Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Have a nice weekend.